Jules, we went out and we met somebody again. This one's a bit different. If you haven't had a chance yet, listen to our previous ones. I think you'll find them interesting, with Uber agent Giovanni Branchini and FIFA president Victor Montaliani. This fella is a bit different, and he's going to tell us who he is.
Gaël Clichy, I'm a football player for Servette FC. I'm 36 years old, and I'm a French ex-international.
Jules, you and Gaël go way back. Yeah. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation, because we're going to hear about that whole arc, being part of Arsenal, mm-hmm. with Arsene Wenger, moving to Manchester City, Aguero at 93 minutes and 20 seconds.
Yes. He's a very intelligent guy. I think he's got a different view on the game than maybe a lot of other players. His reflections on the game are great. His future as well, he wants to become a coach. I think he's got a lot of the qualities to be a good coach too. So always someone very interesting to interview when he was a player in England, for example. And always someone very interesting to chat to about football.
Yeah, you know how one of my favorite Pep questions is asking every professional footballer, at what age were you not the most talented player on your team? In some cases, like Paolo Di Canio, the answer is never. In your case, you told me that it was at 18.
Yeah, probably. Maybe slightly earlier, yeah.
Let's see what Gaël Clichy says.
The first time I realized I wasn't the most talented player, I think I realized quickly when I signed for Arsenal that I was no longer one of the best players in the group.
No,
that's fair enough.
Well, obviously, you know, you go through different phases when you grow up as a kid, and you know, you have some kids who are bigger than you, faster, stronger than you. So if I give you an example, I was at 13 years old in a football school in France, a little bit like what Julien will know in Clairefontaine, south of France. And already when you are in this group of players, you are part of the 20 elite players of the area. So already at that moment, you realize that you have qualities. Obviously, you need to progress, you need to improve, but you kind of quickly realize how good you are. And then eventually you sign up for a team like Cannes, which is a professional football club. And then from that moment, you know, also, you know, you're becoming a young professional. So I was lucky enough to have some quality that quickly made me realize that I could do something into the job. But like I said, you're going through phases where you grow up faster than others, you get injuries more often than others. And it was my case. So every time I was hitting good momentum, I was getting injured, my back, my knees, my ankles. And then quickly you realize that, you know, football life is good, but you know, you have ups and downs. But like I said, when you sign for a team like Arsenal, which is, well, you know more than me what Arsenal used to be at that time, you need to work to stay in the industry, you know.
Before you arrived to Arsenal, there was something big that happened in your life that has nothing to do with football. Is that incident you had when you were a bit younger before the move, where, I mean, for people who are listening to the show, they won't see your hands, but we see them because we're on Zoom. You're not wearing any rings, although you're married to the lovely Charlene and all of that, but there's no rings on your hands. But that day, you had a ring on your hands. And if you could just tell us what happened and what you remember of the day where you had that accident that could have changed pretty much everything.
Well, I remember clearly, and you'll be laughing, but I remember it was a Friday 13, which is, you know, in France, it's a day where, you know, it's a little bit of bad luck.
Yeah.
I remember that day it was Marseille PSG, you know, the game in League One. And we were all excited about that, you know, because being in Cannes, you know, there were a lot of supporters from Marseille, and I'm supporting Paris. So I remember that day clearly. And I won't tell the reason I was late, but after school, I won't tell. But after school, I had to stay a little bit behind because I had to talk to somebody. And to be on time for training, the stadium was being rebuilt. So there was some work. And instead of going all the way around, you know, we were cutting through the war zone, you know, and I just jumped over the fence, and I had a ring, like you said, and my ring just got caught in a little piece of metal like this. And I remember when I fell down, I felt like something really burning my finger. And then I look at my hand and the whole skin was gone, you know. So rush back to the training ground. The coach is taking me to the hospital. I'm bleeding, and you know, I can clearly see on people's face when they see my hand that something is wrong. But I'm a little bit scared to watch because the first time I watch, I can see, I can actually see the bone, you know, from my finger.
Oh my God.
And then I get to the hospital and I'm talking to this woman, you know, this nurse. And I'm like, am I going to be okay? I said, yes, don't worry, darling. You're okay. Don't worry. Then she goes next door and I can hear her calling the surgeon. Please, Madame Pionchon, I remember the name. Madame Pionchon, come back quick because I have a boy, a young boy. If we don't do the operation within 40 minutes, he's going to lose his finger. And then she's coming back with a smile on her face. And I'm like, mom, you just told me everything is fine. And then from that moment, you know, rush back to the ER and then operation. And then things happen. Basically, I had a 7 hours surgery. My heart stopped for 15 seconds. And when I woke up, I just spoke with my parents. And I wouldn't say that this changed my life or the way I see things, but you just realize that, you know, you are here today and then maybe tomorrow you're not there. So life is never something that you can take for granted, you know?
I don't want to get overly technical here or medical, but you said it's a 7 hour surgery to repair your finger. I'm guessing something else must have gone wrong during the surgery as well for your heart to stop like that. And obviously you were under anesthetic, so you don't remember, but it must have been absolutely terrifying for your parents. Were they aware of what was happening, or did the doctor just tell them afterwards?
Yeah, I think pretty quick. I think it was a microsurgery with all the nerves, so that's why it took long. And I think I had a reaction with the anesthetic products. So I have a card now saying that if I have to have an emergency intervention, you know, this product is prohibited, kind of. And I think after maybe 3 hours, 3.5 hours, they called my parents, and straight away they came. They came from Toulouse to Cannes, which is a 5-6 hour drive. It was a little bit scary for them because, you know, you have your son doing what he likes. And even if you get used to it, you know, from being far, and you know that your son or your kids is doing what he wants, he's living the dream, kind of, you're still a parent. And I'm a father today, and I know that when my daughter or my son just get a small cut on the arm, you know, I'm feeling for them. So I cannot imagine how they felt, but really, you know, this is an example of, you know, what can change in 1 second, you know, and life is like that. And that's why today I'm enjoying what I'm doing, because it's a passion, but also because I know I'm super lucky to be able to do what I like, you know?
You know, it's funny because you said when you introduced yourself, you were 36, and I still see you as a 16-year-old almost, or when we were young and little. But when you were at Cannes, and you were doing great things at Cannes, but for a club like Arsenal and their scouts in the South, and you can explain it all, seeing you, what does it make you feel that someone comes and says, hey, listen, Arsene Wenger and Arsenal and Thierry Henry and Patrick Vieira, all of that, you could be part of that. Would you be interested in that? How did you feel that day?
You know, well, you know me more than anyone else, but when I was in Cannes, it was the third division in France. And my only intention with my dad at the time was really to keep a steady progression. So from Cannes, we wished to sign for a team in second division to just progress a little bit more, and then eventually to see if I take the step into the League One. And that was, you know, the aim and the objective for my dad and myself. But obviously, when someone like Arsene Wenger is calling you and telling you that he wants to meet you, you kind of, you know, throw everything into the bin. You know, the plan you had, you know, you throw it in the bin. And I remember clearly the day when my dad called me and he told me, we're coming this weekend because Arsene Wenger wants to meet you outside of Cannes. And I was like, you know, daddy, we don't joke with things like that. You know, what are you talking about? No, that's not real. It's impossible. And next thing I know, I'm sat in front of, you know, him with my dad and my mom on my side. And just listening to him saying how well I'm doing. They've been looking at my performances, you know, not only during games, but also during training sessions for the last 6 months, giving me facts about some training session that happened to just make me realize that they were actually really looking after me, you know, looking at, you know, my game and my training session. It was impressive, you know. And I remember I just listened to him for like, you know, 20 minutes. And then my first question to him was like, everything that you say is great, and obviously I want to join, but I'm aware that, you know, Ashley Cole was the number one, and I'm not better than him. And Van Bronckhorst was the number two, and I know I'm not better than him. So what's the deal for me to come and to do what, you know, because I just want to play football. And I remember, you know, he told me, listen, Gael, you know, if I'm here today, it's because we really want you to come. We want you to be part of our structure. We want to give you a chance of becoming a really good professional. And you can take my word for it. I've got nothing to prove you that I'm going to do it. But if you come, we're going to send Van Bronckhorst on loan, you know. So then it will be Ashley Cole and you. If you're performing, if you're serious and you progress the way we think you can develop, you'll be playing. And then from that moment, I said, okay, let's try. And after a week of preseason, when I signed for Arsenal, Van Bronckhorst was loaned out to Barcelona. And from that day, I realized who was Arsene Wenger. And from there, you know, I never looked back.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I follow this, because people who don't necessarily follow football and the intricacies of transfers might not understand how huge this is. I think it's inconceivable today for a manager, even Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp, to have the authority to say, I want this kid, and if he doesn't come, okay, then fine, we have Gio as number two. If he does come, let me just call up Barcelona and send Van Bronckhorst there. I'm wondering today, do you know, did Wenger have this plan, or did you say yes and then Wenger's like, oh no, he said yes. Uh-oh, how are we going to do this? Let's find a place for Van Bronckhorst. Because it's pretty extraordinary today to have a coach with so much power, director of football and coach in one.
Well, I think, in all honesty, you know, Arsenal was and is still a great club at the time. You know, we're talking about a team that did, you know, the impossible, you know, going a season without losing a game. And I think clearly at that time, Gio was happy to be, but I think he needed to be sure of being the number one or playing. You know, he needed game time. And coming from Cannes to learn, and 1 minute there, 10 minutes here, one game here, I was going to be happy. So Ashley Cole was going to be happy. He could play without any pressure. Van Bronckhorst will go and play for Barcelona, which is a huge club. And Gary Cliche was coming and just discovering England. So I think that situation, I made actually, my role in that game was actually the most important one for Arsene Wenger, because without me, maybe he would have had a situation with two world-class players. And it's difficult to manage a situation like that. So I actually take the big credit for that situation.
Joel, the cynic in me also says that if I'm Arsene Wenger, Gael Clichy probably makes a ton less money than Gio Van Bronckhorst.
Yeah.
And I can also kind of go and like, oh yeah, I'll send you to Barcelona and look, and I'll look good with Mr. Dean upstairs.
Yeah, there's that. I think they recognized, you know, how talented Gael was as a young age. And just imagine going from Cannes in the third division to the Arsenal dressing room, you know, from players that were average players to world-class players and some of the best in the position at such a young age. You know, how he must have felt to go and play with Pires, or even just find himself in the same dressing room as Henri, Pires, Bergkamp, all those names. It must have been just crazy for him.
I was looking around me and I was seeing players, like you said, you know, Wiltord, Pires, Vieira, Henri being my idol, you know, being from Martinique. And quickly you realize how lucky you are. And if I have to draw a picture, it will be like, you know, a kid who is going to university and he has to have a final exam where he has to go through all those books or through internet to find information. For me, it was just there. So I could actually be there every day on a bench looking at what Dennis Bergkamp was doing. So obviously what he's doing is not the right formula for me to be a successful player. But for sure, if I take these bits, plus what Vieira is doing, plus Henry, plus this and plus that, I would have a chance, you know, to do something in the industry, you know, in the football world. And for me, it was going to be criminal not to use those guys, you know. So obviously after a few weeks, few months, when you realize you play a game on a Saturday, Sunday is a warm down day, so the player who played are not going out. But then on the Monday, which is 48 hours before after the game, which is the day where you feel the heaviest, your legs are a little bit tired, you see someone like Vieira who is just going crazy, tackling and getting dirty on the pitch. You realize that, okay, I'm not as good as him as a football player in terms of abilities, but if this guy is doing this, I have to match that. you know, and I have to bring that energy. I have to be able to show the manager that what he's doing, I can do also. And for me, that was every day from Monday to Saturday, if we play on the Sunday, and I'm true when I say this, every day for me in my head, when I was working on the pitch, I was saying to myself, today is the day you put the doubt into the boss mind in if he's going to play Ashley Cole or Gael Clichy. Even if I knew that Ashley was always going to play, you know, but for me, my motivation was like Monday, I show him that today he will struggle to decide who is going to play. And then again on Tuesday and then Wednesday and then Thursday and Friday, you have to adapt and you have to bring something to the table for them to be able to say, okay, we need this guy around.
You make a great point there about Patrick Vieira when you're describing him on Monday in training going crazy and winning tackles and so on and having that intensity. And that brings me to something that Arsene Wenger said when he was comparing French football culture and English football culture as it was at the time. He said that French culture is very rational. It comes from René Descartes, Cartesian thinking, rationality, the Enlightenment. English culture is about Beowulf, conquering empires, fighting, passion, and so on. So he was painting this picture that his Arsenal side won because they were able to combine the rationality, the thinking, the quality with the intensity and the passion and the fire. And for me, Patrick Vieira, one of my favorite players, he was the biggest, strongest guy on the pitch, and he was often the smartest guy on the pitch as well. So I loved him. But can you talk a bit about that? Is that just a nice line?
Yeah, I think it's very true. You know, it's very difficult to point only one thing that says, okay, this team was great because of that. But you always hear about, you know, the culture, having different culture in the dressing room, bring different vibes, different way of seeing football, different way of living life, you know, because in the end, football is beautiful because we are all sharing the same life, the same passion, and we have the same common goal. So that's easy. But at the same time, it's probably the most individualized sport, being a collective one, you know, and this is very important because you see, the biggest award is the Ballon d'Or, which is for one person only. For me, what's important in what the boss said is that everyone in that team knew who they were, you know. So everyone individually knew why he was there for. And often you see, you know, people ask me the difference between, okay, my time when I was playing for Arsenal, when Ashley Cole left, with this amazing generation of player, but we never won anything. And that generation, so obviously, you know, that whole generation, you know, you had Patrick Vieira, Thierry Henry, everyone knew that if you needed to win the game, Henry was going to win you the game, you know. Gilberto Silva knew that he wasn't going in the front cover of any newspapers because that wasn't his job. But everybody knew that without him, the team will perform still, but not as good as with him, you know, and so on. So I think that was the main reason for me why that team was so successful, because there was a mixture of different culture, French, African, English, you know, British, but also because we had men, you know, we had men within the team fighting in training after games. They could talk to each other. And I think this is a combination between respect that you have towards your teammates, who you are in terms of what you represent in the football world. Patrick Vieira or Thierry Henry, they knew even if they don't perform for five games, nobody will tell them that they have to sit on the bench, because we know who they are. When you're a little bit younger, you need to make a name for yourself. So, you know, I would say that, you know, if you lose 4-3, but you score 3 goals, a young player will kind of be happy to go home, you know, because he knows that he performed. This team didn't want none of that. This team wanted to win, even if it meant that we're only going to talk about Thierry Henry today. Their only aim and objective was to win. So, yes, it's a mix of everything. But, you know, when you have someone leading the way like Arsene Wenger, and you have players like he had, you know, everything was going to be all right, because he's, for me, he changed the way people saw football in England, and he made Arsenal what Arsenal is today. So there's no word to describe, you know, to describe him and to describe what he did, you know, for the club and for football in general.
This is a tough one, but what was the best, or what was the most amazing? Was it Thierry and his ability, the goal scoring at training, in games or whatever? Was it Dennis' technical ability? Was it Vieira's all-around personality, game, energy, everything? Was it Wenger? Was it the fact that you had people like Tony Adams? If you could just pick one, or maybe not, maybe you can't pick one, but as a young player like you were, and then even later on, what was the most amazing for you?
Honestly, I could give you one, but it's very difficult because I mean, you know, Thierry Henry is Thierry Henry, and I'm from Martinique, so he was my idol. I mean, put it into consideration, after signed for Arsenal in the summer, and few weeks before I was in Cannes, and my bedroom was full covered of pictures of him, you know, him, Sylvain Wiltord, and those guys. So just that is just to tell you what an impact, you know, he had on me. But, you know, you had someone like Vieira who invited me, you know, from my first Christmas, you know, in London, being alone at 17, 18. So he took me to his home with his family for Christmas with my sister and my cousin. I mean, there's no word for that, you know. You can't put that on the side. But then you have someone like Pascal Sigan, you know, who actually was so important for me because he was a little bit like me, not playing every game. So I'll give you an example. The team would be playing on Saturday, going away on a Friday. So I would be training on Saturday with him. And he would be telling me how football works, how what people are expecting from you in England. And this is often the kind of name that we don't mention in interview because obviously we want to know about Thierry Henry, Patrick Vieira, Dennis Bergkamp. But Pascal was so important as a young lad, you know. He actually taught me how to be a football player in Arsenal, you know. And then you have someone like Kolo Touré who was taking me every two nights, you know, with his family for dinner, you know. So I couldn't name one, you know, but you had moments where I remember when I was injured, you know, I've been injured for nearly a year and a half, you know, with my foot. And I remember that it was a time where I was really down because I had the first operation on my fifth metatarsal. I came back after a few weeks, got injured again. And that was the worst one, the second one, because Ashley, you know, got injured also, you know. So I knew that if I was fit, then I was going to play. It's the year when I think we made a great season, you know, during the Champions League campaign. So that was a hard one. And I remember one day I was really low in the dressing room, and I was never talking to Dennis. You know, Dennis is not someone who talks too much, you know. So he's someone when he talks, you don't have a choice, but you just listen to him, you know, because he got such a charisma that, I mean, he's Dennis, you know. Everything about him is beautiful, you know. His car, the way he walks, the way he plays, you know. I mean, Dennis Bergkamp. And he comes to me and he tells me, what's wrong? And I said, well, you know, I'm a little bit down, you know. And I was just about to come back, but I was still, you know, I wasn't sure if I, you know, it's those moments when you play football where you know you're not far, but at the same time it's been nearly a year and you just don't feel, you even think that maybe you're not going to play football anymore. And he told me, listen, Gael, you know, Ash is out. Ashley Cole is out. The first one that will come back out of you two, you know, the boss is going to play him. Just get fit and you'll be playing. I don't know if he was lying or not. Those words, he was probably lying, I don't know. Those words at the time was actually what I needed, you know. And I remember clearly that moment because I needed that. And perhaps someone like Thierry saying those words would have the impact would have been different because I was more close to him and we had a different relationship. Dennis at that time what I needed. So I don't know if he felt it, if he felt a little bit sad to see a young lad struggling, but that moment is what I needed to hear. And just to come back to your question, every single one of them, even those who I never had a real strong connection, in a way helped me, you know. And that's why I said I'm forever grateful for them being there for me without knowing. They kind of teach me, raise me, and how to become a player, and more than that, to become a man, you know. So yeah, forever grateful for what they did to me, for me, you know.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Joe, I was really struck by this part of the conversation about, you know, this kid who lands there.
Yeah.
And you've got, you know, obviously Henri, Pires, Patrick Vieira, Dennis Bergkamp. But, and we saw the impact Dennis Bergkamp had there. But to create that environment where these veteran superstars are so nurturing towards the young players, that comes from the top. That comes from Wenger and the culture he has there. Because it's great that those are nice guys. It's great that, and willing to help younger players. It's great that Clichy's there, eager to learn. But you need to have the architecture in place for that to happen. And that's something that I think is quite rare at a lot of big clubs.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think Gael felt it. And him and the others, you know, like Cesc Fabregas and all of that, it was that kind of environment there at the club.
It's interesting because obviously from there, he moves to Manchester City.
Yeah.
Fair to say, slightly acrimonious move at the time, certainly the way it was presented in the media. But let's get his take on it.
It was a really difficult time because, people who knows me, they know that at that time, if I could have signed a contract for life with Arsenal, I would have done it, you know. I came at a young age, I became a man in London, I became a pro at Arsenal, and Arsenal is more than just a club in France. Probably today, new generation of French players don't have the same connection. Arsenal maybe doesn't represent what Arsenal used to be at the time for French people, you know. Arsene Wenger, Thierry Henry, Patrick Vieira, Robert Pires, Wiltord. Arsenal was the club, you know. So for me to come in there and to learn from so many people, become a regular for the club, and making the transition from Ivory to Emirates, for me it was like a no-brainer. If something was on the table for me to stay many more years, I would. But then we arrive in a moment, I think, and I'm being honest, where I felt that I had to go, and I felt that the club, they wanted me to stay, but I don't think they wanted me to stay at any cost. And I remember I had a few chats with the boss, and I told him, "Boss, I don't really understand. In today's football, if you want to keep a player, you keep a player. It's simple as that." And I told him, I just don't feel that, you know. They were trying to build, you know, this new generation of players, with the core players being from England, you know. There were 5-6 players that they used, you know, on article and board and stuff. You know, you just feel that, okay, maybe it's time. You know, the club don't really want you to stay. And even if you want to stay, you have to understand someone is behind, and they want to push this player. And it was the same with me, you know, and that's what the boss told me. He told me, "Listen, we are in the same situation. When Ashley left for Chelsea, of course we wanted to keep Ashley because he's the best in the world. But at the same time, we have someone like you behind working for the last 5 years that we feel can bring something to the team. And we want to it's not a gamble, but we want to give the chance to the young players." And that was Arsenal's philosophy. So he told me what we are finding ourselves, the situation we are in now, with you, and it was Kieran Gibbs at the time. He told me it's exactly the same situation with you and Ashley. It was a time in my career where I was thinking about the national team also, and I felt that if I wanted to try and grab something from the national team, to grab to be a regular for France, I felt that I need to a club where you win things, because I do feel in football, as well as you play, as many games as you play, you cannot compete with people who are winning trophies. I was fighting with Eric Abidal, who was at Barcelona at the time, I was at United. So I just felt that. And in a way, again, if I'm being honest, I felt the club, because we haven't won anything as a club. But obviously, who is responsible for the performances? The players. Who was the number one left back? Me. So in a way, I was thinking, I didn't do it. Can we do it? I'm pretty sure we could have done it. But it was a time to just move on, you know, and that's me being honest, you know. So it was a little bit of all those facts that made me go and go to City to win things. So it was hard for some people to hear this, but then my choice, you know, after 12 months, I won the first league with City. And when I look back, those 6 years were amazing, and it was the right choice for me.
You go from a club which has had the same manager forever, which has such a strong culture, strong philosophy, to Manchester City. Today, they have a very strong ingrained philosophy. At the time, they had a lot of money, and they were trying to build a winning culture just as you arrive. And they're buying players left, right, center, and Mancini's there. And can you just describe a little bit about that? Because it's partly about growing together, but when you try to grow together, you also make mistakes.
Yes, it's a funny one, because, you know, when I was with Arsenal, it's obviously a huge club. And every season we're going into the season saying that we're fighting for every competition, you know. That was the aim. And we are such a talented generation. And you can see today how hard it is. I remember the last few years of the boss, you know, at being an Arsenal manager. He got so bad critics, and it's fair, because football is about results. I did an article saying, you know, we have to be careful for what we're wishing for, you know, as a fan, because I do believe with the situation, the current situation of the club, no one will do better than Arsene Wenger, you know. And that's a few years ago, and when I look back now, I was right, you know. He was always the best man for the job. The moment I arrived at City, I realized that we didn't have two players, international player at his position. We had nearly three players, international, at his position, meaning that even if you perform good on the weekend, you're not going to play on Wednesday. Why? Because someone is perhaps better than you, or is in a better form than you, or just because the boss wants to decide, and he has that chance. And, you know, when you see someone like Guardiola today, I think his philosophy is amazing, and the work he's doing is unbelievable. And that's, nobody can deny that. It's always easier when you buy a 40 million goalkeeper, and after 8 months, you decide to get another one for 55 million. And it's always easier when you have David Silva, who's not performing, and you have behind him Bernardo Silva, you know. It's easy to have Aguero and to have Jesus, you know. Some teams, some clubs don't have that luxury. Obviously, it's a club that is growing, so you don't know what you're going to get. But from the moment you arrive, you realize that, you know, your position is on the line. Everybody is hungry for success. And I'm not surprised that, you know, we've won so many things in 6 years during my time, and even more so what they're doing since Guardiola arrived. You know, this club is more than just a normal club. They're trying to do everything to a certain perfection that, you know, in a way they are ruthless in the management. They are caring in the management, and for me to have those ingredients with the quality of the player and the manager they have, it's a recipe for success, you know. So that's the reason I went there. Obviously, it could have been that after 6 years I look back and it was a mess, because we've seen clubs going like that, you know, with big ambition and big money, and they never really managed to do it. City, I mean, you know, every year it seems that they're improving, you know. And for me, it was a hard decision to go, but it was the best decision that I've done in my career.
To win the title the first season the way you did, with the Aguero goal against Queen's Park Rangers at home as well, in the dying seconds of the game, would have made that first season special. What do you remember of that day?
for me, coming from Arsenal, I kind of had to prove a point on a personal note, you know, because you know how football goes. You know, you go to a club like, and people will say that you went for the money and blah, blah, blah. And then if you don't play, you know, we've heard that story many times. So my ambitions and my aim was really to, from the first season, to show people that I left to actually win something. So I was lucky, you know, because, you know, like you said, you know, it's last kick of the game. But I mean, that year, I discovered a new way of playing football. I discovered a new way of being as a group, you know, because 8 years with Arsene Wenger, you know, it's example, it's just an example, and you will understand why I'm using this. 8 years of preseason, we're going to Austria, you know, very, very strict on what to eat, what to not eat. We don't really have time off, you know, during the preseason. We are here to work, we are here to create something. And then I signed for City and I found myself in preseason in Los Angeles, you know. It's a totally different game, you know. It's a totally different game. We having time out and I'm thinking, wait, you know, for 8 years I've been tough like that and we are doing like this. So it was kind of a way for me to learn that I knew, obviously, but I experienced a new way of being a football professional. And again, you know, if you ask me what I remember about it, I remember everything. I remember a little boy crying in the stand when we were losing 2-1, you know, against QPR. I remember that feeling when Zeko scored the equalizer, knowing, even though we didn't have much to play, that we were going to score, because that was the strength of the team, you know, to be together and to get things done the right way, you know.
Gil, when the ball got to... Because everybody remembers Aguero in the commentary.
I knew you were going to mention the Italian guy.
Made the goal possible. When the ball got to Mario, did you think, oh, he's not going to see Aguero. Oh, this idiot's just going to shoot against a defender and throw his hands in the air. Did you have faith that he was going to see Aguero?
You know, but that's exactly it, you know. The ball could have landed into any player's feet. For me, the reason I'm saying that this team was special because... You know, you go to Old Trafford and you win 6-1. That's never happened before, you know. I've been in England for 8 years and I've never won at Old. And then I arrive in that season and we win 6-1 away from, you know, from home. We have that situation with Tevez, you know, against Bayern Munich, where Mancini saying you're never going to play for the club anymore. And then he comes back and so many goals that Aguero is raising his level, you know, above what we thought that was his max. And then scoring goals and banging goals. And yeah, you see that game and you think, obviously, who's going to score the equalizer that we all need? Super sub, you know, Zeko. He was never happy to be on the bench, but every time he was coming in, he was the guy who was going to score the winning goals or to score the equalizer. So obviously no one else than him was going to score that goal. And yeah, Mario getting that ball, the way he shipped the ball to Aguero, the way Aguero smashed the ball, everything was in place for us to win it, really, you know. So the memories are just... amazing. And obviously you cannot compare the invincible season and that team with City, but the moment, the build up to the game and the way the game was played is going to, you know, eternal in people's memory, you know.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
I'm fascinated by it. Regular listeners will know that Roberto Mancini, for me, is still the most talented Italian player of his generation, probably the last 50 years. And yes, that includes Roberto Baggio. And it was a hurdle, a bit like the old Glenn Hoddle stories about when he started managing.
Yeah.
When he's got to teach players and be like, wait, why don't you just go control the ball off the chest and hit a 40-yard pass with the outside of your boot and see the fullback streaking? And
what can you do what I can do?
Exactly.
Even now.
But it is a very different dynamic, and it's completely different from Arsene Wenger, who I think you'd be the first to admit was a very ordinary player.
He had two matches in that Strasbourg-winning title season in France.
But he was great in the dressing room. Yep. So Let's ask Gail about that.
Obviously, when you've been a great player, you see the game differently than regular players or even top players. But if you've been so good, you know, sometimes you will not understand how this player didn't see that pass. But more than that, I really believe that you have a philosophy, you have a way, and you want your group of players to stick to it. So the hardest part is to make 20 players buy into how you want to play football. But yeah, you know, I'm here today in Servette, and it's very humbling because lucky for me, I've been into really big teams for 20 years. And coming here, I can see exactly what you said. You know, you can see some players with the ball, not seeing the pass or not seeing the position they have to take, or sometimes they see it, but they cannot realize or execute the pass, you know? And it's frustrating because for you, it's something that is, I mean, I play with David Silva and Dennis Bergkamp, so I've seen them do it. So why can you not do it? And it's very good because it's teaching me that football is not what I have known during my 15, 20 years of career. But football is perhaps the other side of football, you know? And when you start as a coach, you realize that going to City, going to Arsenal, you know, you are very grateful. So those players, you know, someone like Mancini was actually playing with us sometimes during games, and you could see that he was good. And you can understand why those coaches like Pep can get frustrated, because they played the game, they played better than me, and now they're manager and they just think, I mean, that's an easy pass to make. So, but they need to, I mean, they do understand that not everybody is like that, you know?
Mancini was important. I mean, Wenger was obviously super important, even more than just being a football coach for you. Then Mancini was important because of that title, because the moment he was in your career. And I remember when you made that switch, I could not get used to you in a different shirt than the red shirt, to be fair. But, and then Pep arrived, and Pellegrini in between. And Pellegrini, you had a good relationship with him, but Pep is a different level. What was your experience with Pep? Now that you have a bit of insight of looking at those years you worked together, the impact that he had at the club, how would you reflect on it?
Arsene is and will always be who he was and who he is to me. Mancini is actually the one who made me make the switch from Arsenal to City. So he's actually the only coach who wanted me, you know, other than Wenger. I will always be aware of that. We had a really good relationship and we're still in touch today. But again, you know, Pep is probably the one that gets mentioned the most because he's Pep, you know. I cannot get my head around it, how a manager wouldn't want his team to play the way he makes his team play. So obviously, you know, the talent of the player that you have at disposal as a manager will make you go, you know, this way, and it's easier to play football when you have talented player like De Bruyne and stuff like that. You go into the game during the weekend knowing what you have to do. And for me, watching a game today and I don't see what he showed me in 10 months, I'm thinking, why? You know, why is he to play the way he wants to play? I would have loved to know him earlier in my career. But at the same time, I understand why player like Boyan or Afellay, you know, those young players from Barcelona, kind of struggle when they left Barcelona. They learn a way of playing football. When you move to a different club with a different philosophy, how do you cope with that, you know? And it's a funny one because he's amazing, but at the same time, it just shows you that the way he thinks is really and purely for him, you know? So it means that you can be great within this Man City team, but it doesn't mean that if you move from City to another club, it doesn't mean that you're going to be as good as a player that you were at City. I don't know if you kind of see my point, yeah. But I really do believe that he improved his team and his player individual. He's amazing for that. He's truly, it's something that you have to experience to really understand.
I mean, I think you make a great point. And what strikes me about Pep, his City team is really about the collective. I think back to Barcelona. Obviously, you ask who was the most important player when he was at Barcelona. Obviously, it's Messi. But if I was to ask you now, and you still watch a lot of football, you think you're watching football with a head of a manager, right? Because you're taking your coaching badges. If I was to ask you who is the most important player at Manchester City, you might give a different answer every week. Because obviously they're all very good, And maybe we can debate whether De Bruyne is the best or whatever. But when De Bruyne is not there, somebody else plays and the outcome doesn't change. Tell me if you agree that everybody's important, but nobody's crucial at Manchester City.
That's why it's so impressive with Pep, is that he makes a team play the way he wants to play. And again, that's why I'm coming back to my point earlier, where it's always easier to have De Bruyne. It's easier to have Laporte, Stones, and Ruben. You know, you have quality players everywhere, so you don't really miss it. But the harder thing when you have so much talent available is to be able to manage those players. And he knows how to do it. He's ruthless, you know. You could be performing for 4 weeks or 4 months, and then all of a sudden you can feel that your body language is different, or your behavior or your commitment in the everyday, you know, from Monday to Sunday. If he feels that somewhere you've dropped a little bit of percentage of physically attribute, of mentally, of commitment, of desire, he will not be scared to just put you on the side and play someone. He wants his player to perform, and you give me what I want, you will play. If you cannot, you will simply be out of it. And for me, it's quite impressive to see, and you've seen it since he's been at City. You will have a player who is performing for 2 years in a row, and then all of a sudden you don't see this player anymore. You know, he's a little bit less used, and everybody is wondering, ah, but why? There's no why. It's just because he feels that you're not giving him what he wants. And for him, it's that simple, you know, no names. And to be fair, the only player that he always mentioned that is a different player is Lionel Messi. He's always strict on that. He's saying the only player that you don't teach how to play football is Lionel Messi. The rest, we can all improve.
I know you so well, but you don't have the character that Pep has, for example. Even Mancini, his personality. But why is the Gallicliche manager is going to take away from Wenger, Mancini, Pellegrini, Pep, Turkey, Switzerland, even Raymond Domenech? Maybe there's something that you liked in Domenech. I mean, maybe, you know, the signs, and you can have a Libra playing with a Leo or whatever.
Oh.
Why are you going to take from all of that?
You know, for me, the comparison between Wenger and Pep, you cannot do it, you know, because you have one that is one of the best, which is Arsene. His main, other than winning things, but I will say that he's the only one in the football world as a manager to be able to take a teenager and to transform him into a world-star player. You know, he's the only one. And not he didn't do it just for one player. Every season, he was able to bring 2, 3, 4 players. That's the number are just crazy. 4 young players that in 5, 6 years will become international and will become the best player on their position. For me, this is just... I mean, you as a manager, if you have that, if I could be that, I'll be, wow, you know, it's just crazy, you know. And on the other side, you have someone like Pep, who got obviously full financial backup with different kind of players. He brings players, he buys top players already. But to do what he does on a daily basis is just crazy. So obviously it's easy, you know, you want to be a bit of Wenger, you want to be a bit of Pep, you want to be a bit of Mancini. You want to be a bit of Pellegrini, you want to be a bit of Didier Deschamps, of Domenech, of Laurent Blanc. Today, I would say that if I have a choice and if I could decide, I will hope to be able to make my team play the way Pep's team are playing. You know, who will not want that? But at the same time, I will die to be able to bring 1 or 2 players in my whole career from teenager to number one in the world, you know, like Fabregas, like Philippe Sanderos, like Gael Clichy. Like, if I could be that, I would take that from Arsene Wenger. If I can be ruthless like Pep and make my team play without thinking about if I'm going to destroy a player or not to have success, it's an attribute to have. So I will take that, you know. If I could have the Italian mentality, like, you know, I learned with Mancini, that way of making a group together, because that was one of the strong points he had. He was giving so much freedom to the players that the group was forming and becoming one, you know, and that was special. So obviously you can think from anyone, but those three managers for me, I will also use Didier Deschamps, because I think that, like Mancini, he had that talent to get the best out of each individual within the team is not scared to leave perhaps the best players out of a tournament to make sure that the cohesion of the group is better than the individual you have. So those four manager for me we'll stay there because they I've learned a lot with them four.
There's stories about how Pep can be tough and ruthless. I was surprised, to be honest, about Gale being so forthright and saying about, like, you know, going and destroying a player, because he's always kind of the cerebral family guys, you know, and he's got this great sense of community. And I couldn't help, again, to juxtapose that with Wenger, who I think some would say was actually maybe too nurturing, and I'm not just thinking of keeping Andre or Chauvin around and Theo Walcott around forever. Do you see that difference in the same way?
Yeah, although I've seen Wenger being really ruthless with some players as well. But I think the thing with Gael is that he's always been so good at reading the room, in the sense that he would have learned so much from all those managers when to be ruthless and why you have to be in certain situation, when you have to be nice and put your arm around a player. And he was always very good with navigating with all of those emotions, him as a player, and I'm convinced that as a manager, when he becomes a manager, because it's inevitable now that he will become a manager, that he will know exactly what to do. I think there's a lot of positive to take from working with Pep, and there's some things that are not great. Same with Wenger, same with Mancini, same with Domenech, same with Deschamps. Of course, everybody is the same with every job that you do, but he's always been so good at identifying why you do this, then why not doing this, why taking a step back. And I think he got that from all those experiences he's got with the managers. You're right, it's very different to deal as a player with Wenger than it is with Pep.
Still cannot believe you mentioned Raymond Domenech in the same breath as Didier Deschamps, Roberto Mancini, Pep Guardiola, and Arsene Wenger. People who actually won things.
I know, but it's a reality that he would also have learned a lot from him, not in a very positive way.
Exactly.
But still.
So I want to ask Gail about the evolution of younger players and the maturity levels of younger players, because we always have the sense younger players need to be protected, they're less mature. But there was something, as you know, when Gianluca Vialli and I wrote The Italian Job many years ago, we had the opportunity to spend a ton of time with Arsene Wenger. It was the kind of thing where he's like, yes, come over after training and we'll have some lunch. And then, you know, you go over after training, you have lunch at London Colney, and then everybody, all the players are there, and then they all leave, and then you're still talking and talking and talking, and then he orders some sandwiches for dinner, and then it's dark outside, and literally it feels like we're the only three people left in the building, right? And in the course of that, he said something that surprised me, because it seemed very counterintuitive. A lot of managers says, well, you know, this guy's too young, he's too green. He said that players at 18 or 19 often, and this was even back then, 15 years ago, are more mature than people who aren't professional footballers at 18 and 19,
yeah,
because of the sacrifices they go through, because of the regimentation they go through. Okay, they may have some money and some privilege and some glamour at a young age, but they're also very cognizant of their responsibility. So I want to ask Gail, and I wonder if maybe he was talking specifically about Gail at that time, I don't know. But I want to get his take on that. And now that he's the old guy in the dressing room, how does he see the younger players that he works with every day at Servette?
My little brother is 19 and he plays for Ajaccio now in France. And I think he's got talent. I think he's, I wouldn't say he's better than me at the same age, but he's really good. But I would say, from what I see, my generation, if I can say, we used to love football because of what football is. You know, we love to be outside, we love to be on the pitch, I love the smell of the grass. I love football. So I wouldn't say that I love football more than this new generation, but I do feel that this new generation love football because they know that football can make them the next Neymar, you know, and with all that goes with it, you know, Instagram and followers and Snapchat and pictures and videos and glamours. So I'm not saying I love football more than them, but I do feel that I respect football more than what they respect football for what it is. And it comes to the point where what Arsene Wenger said is that we had a shift, you know, between what football represents as a whole, not just as a sport, but as a whole. And being 36 now and passing my badges now, they put a lot of importance in the fact that the next manager need to be able and aware that football is changing, new generation are different. And obviously you cannot tell young players now to go and clean the old players' boots, example. When I came to Arsenal, the player just before me were not allowed to wear trousers, even if it was cold. They were not allowed to wear gloves, no hats. And it's a little bit harsh, if you say, but that's the old way of learning how to play football. And I'm still part of that because that's how I grew up. And I think you have to be able as a coach to evolve with the new generation and to understand how they live. After a game, they go straight on their phone to check if we're talking about them on Instagram, if this is been shown on video and stuff like that. And you have to accept it because you cannot stop the evolution of life and how football progresses. But yes, I do believe this new generation is totally different from what I've learned, you know.
How is Servette? How is Switzerland?
Yeah, it's good.
Geneva's, you know, boring. Geneva's really boring, right?
Gab doesn't like Geneva.
Compared to you lived in London, you lived in Istanbul, okay, Manchester put to one side. Geneva is, you know, young family, whatever, the flower clock. It's kind of boring though, no?
No, but you know what? It is. And to be fair, after...
It's close to France. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, to be fair, coming from Istanbul and with the situation worldwide, you know, the pandemic, we just felt that we wanted to get closer to the family. So we look for a place where the kids could still go and go to British school because they were born in England and we have that connection with England. And Geneva was the perfect one. I decided also to join Servette because they had the project. And obviously, you know, I'm thinking ahead. They will give me a chance to become a coach. I know how hard it is to get a job, you know, as a coach in football today, even more when you have everything to learn. So it was kind of a package with the family, you know, being the center of it, you know, the decision that made me want to come to Geneva. I still wanted to enjoy and play a little bit of football. So the level is what it is, but, you know, I can still enjoy a little bit. Personally, it was a great, great place for me to be able to learn. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, they would give me the chance to become a coach if I want to. So, you know, it was more of a package more than anything else, but I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it because there's a lot of young players. I have to share a lot of things. I'm very close with the manager, so I have some responsibility. I'm passing my badges now. And I think, you know, in a few years, I will look back and think that it was the right decision for me to come here.
Gail, you've been so generous for your time.
Yeah,
I do one other little test. I know strikers remember every goal that they scored. And I'm just curious, do you know how many league goals you scored in your career? And I'm not trolling you.
You are.
My man, you're not judged on the number of goals you scored. But do you know how many you scored in your career?
I think it's 6 or 8, I think.
In between. You scored, according to Wikipedia, which is never wrong, it's 7 league goals. And it's 1 for Arsenal and 2 for Manchester City. But you started scoring more recently because you've scored, again, according to Wikipedia, 4 goals since leaving Manchester City. So I'm wondering if maybe you're holding, should have been more confident when you were younger, man.
You want to know the truth? Scoring more goals because the level is a little bit lower. That's the only reason.
Modest as always. Selling himself short.
What a guy. Great.
Did you think it's the ego though? Like, because I think he's played professional football for what, 20 years now? To have only scored 7 goals from a left back position, was he afraid to shoot?
Yeah, no, not afraid. He always thought, I have to make the right call here. We discussed so many times decision making. And I think he knew in a lot of situations that shooting was not the right call, but not the right decision to make. He would rather pass the ball, cross it, whatever. So I think he was more down to that. Than anything else.
Well, it was fascinating. Well, I certainly enjoyed meeting Gael Clichy. We hope you enjoyed him too. He's a third in our series of Gab and Jules Meets. look out for the next ones, and thanks for spending time with us.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjewels, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjewels now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjewels.